Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for Monday, the 25th of February. Very nice to have you all with us, and it's good to be back. Thanks to Ray Graff for filling in while I was away. I appreciate that. He did a great job, and we thank him. Let me go around the room and welcome our wonderful panel, and also to let everybody know how they can be a part of our conversation this morning. Libby Post is here. She is a political consultant, and we are thrilled that she is with us. Busy time for you, so
yes.
Thank you coming in.
Yes, it's very bizarre with the change of the primary. My life has been turned upside down, but it's okay. I'm not complaining. I'm just managing.
You know what? We're glad you could make it for 90
Thank
minutes.
You. Thank
That's
you.
Good.
Thank
All very good.
Yes.
Barry Lewis joins us once again. We haven't seen him for a little while. He's been traveling. Fresh from Boca.
Fresh from Boca. Imagine that. Spoke at a conference on the Catskills at the Boca JCC.
And you sold out the place.
Sold
I bet.
Out the place. Yeah. Yes. So when the album comes out, we'll then go on tour. But
and how were all the Alpacacas? Were they okay?
There's an old Casco joke. Joe and his brother Alta Caca.
Right.
Pause 2-3 seconds. Okay, good.
Yeah.
It was great. It's interesting. Again, it's amazing how the Catskills just reverberate in people's minds and hearts. And it's a month-long exhibition, and they hopefully can bring it up north in the summertime. But the Catskills are alive and well in Boca.
Well, welcome back. Very nice to have you with us. Barry Lewis, of course, is the executive editor of the Times Herald Record, and we always appreciate him making his way north. Jim Ketterer is with us. He is Dean of International Studies at Bard College and Academic Director of the Bard Globalization and International Affairs Program. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us
nice
as well.
Nice to be back. Thanks.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
Well, good, but all is well now that you're back. Always missed, and we're delighted you're here.
Well, thank you very much. It's very nice to be back. We're, a lot of topics to talk about. We'll get to as many as we possibly can. We do welcome your input as well. Panel at WAMC.org. I just want to real quickly, I had this very weird experience. I was in Barbados over the weekend, and I was getting ready to fly out. And, you try to adhere to as much of your routine as you can when you're on vacation, or at least I do. And a part of my routine is to get up and read the New York Times. So I go in, I pick up, and I plug in on my iPad, and I start reading the New York Times. Boom, there's Alan's name. First paragraph. Boom.
Wow.
Boom. There you go. And I knew the governor had been on Friday, and I had listened to it. But, wow, that was something, Alan. Good
sure,
for you.
Sure made. Well, it wasn't good for me. It was...
Well, it's good for – I think it's good for you, and I think it's good for WAMC, but
well,
that's just
there
me.
He was. He chose us. He really let everybody have it, and he made a lot of headlines, that's for sure.
Oh, yes, the –
But I thought it was fascinating. I mean, look, it's he had been silent on the subject for a long time,
yep.
And then came on, and it was like you just took a cork out of him, and he just went. Pew.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Mike Gianaris, who was really very important in this whole decision making because he was appointed by the Democrats by Andrew Stewart Cousins to be on this board, which would make the ultimate decisions about Amazon. It was a big mistake. They should not have done it. But they did it, and it was unnecessary. I got a letter from a state senator who I like very much, who said to me, look, Alan, you could have been tougher on the governor because you should have made him aware that if he didn't like Gianaris, all he had to do was tell us, I don't like the guy you appointed, and he shouldn't be the and we would have appointed somebody else. The point being, what in the world is that about? It's clear that they were out to embarrass the governor. Now, the Democrats finally won the state Senate in New York, and I think they are bound and determined to screw it up. Because if they keep doing what they're doing, which is to pick unnecessary fights that they know are unnecessary, they're going to screw it up and they'll be back with a Republican Senate. And I don't know that Cuomo will be all that angry about that either.
I'm curious, Alan, why didn't the governor, seeing how this was playing out and seeing how important Amazon was in this, why didn't he take more steps to, politically address this?
It's a very interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll bet you have an idea.
Well, I'm just kind of curious. He
You think he could have? He didn't, which I think I'm hearing maybe a little bit of. Maybe he really didn't want Amazon here.
Right. Well, the thing is, when he wants something, he gets it. And if he really wanted Amazon, and he knew how this might play out, and he knew the people in the city, the political machines that were not in favor of it, he could have used his weight on this. This would have been one of those ones where he could have used his political might. And for whatever reason, once the decision comes out, he's silent about it for about a week or two.
Well, it's very difficult for him, because when you think about this, he puts himself into a position where he's got to be the head Democrat. He's always wanted the Republicans in power. We all knew it. And he was extremely... This was a disciplinary moment for him with the Democratic Senate. He decided to go for it. Fortunately, he chose us to go for it on anybody, and anybody who was listening that day. And it was the only place he did it. But what was even more extraordinary to me is that the Times put my name in the article.
Well, what's the fallout now?
For him? What do you mean?
For him and his relationship with the state Senate, because this does not end. This just begins.
No, they know. They now know. If you fool with them, you're going to have to take it on the chin. Now, AOC, Cortez, she adds a dimension to this. There is a whole progressive movement, right, Libby? Progressive movement
here. I think if she hadn't beat Joel Crowley, this whole thing would have been totally different. Yeah. It would have been a totally different scenario.
See, to it, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, Alan, but in my hearing of the interview with the governor, he seemed to not want to put her down as much as he did.
Well, exactly right.
He's smart because he realizes her strength now in Washington.
That's exactly right. They're all scared. And in her district. They're all scared to death of her and the newly awoken... progressive group. And that's why, of course, Gianaris, who had signed on to the Amazon deal, he's the number two guy in the Senate, he had signed on to it, he had encouraged it, he put his name down in the letter. But when she came out and said, this is a populist issue, and she was wrong, by the way, and I must say, if I'm any indication of this, I think, look, I really loved what she was doing. I thought that she had awoken a lot of progressives and she had been saying a lot of good stuff. I don't feel that way right now. I'm sort of angry at her.
I think it would have been a good thing for Long Island City.
It's a lot of jobs.
It was a lot of jobs.
23,000.
And by the way, the polling all shows that.
Right.
They wanted
jobs. And a lot of jobs for local people, right?
Yeah.
Which would have helped stem off the gentrification that would have ultimately happened, because the people who live there would be able to become homeowners and buy either the homes that they are renting or enhance the homes that they already own or buy new homes. And so, I think I do think it was short-sighted. And, I saw a headline this morning about how, I guess, Google's in Oregon or Washington State. I can't remember which one, but that Amazon has them Seattle over the barrel, and I think who knows if that really played into it, but it would have been great for Long Island City.
But I think that the way that this played out was a big part of the problem, that the negotiations were not inclusive, that it was only kind of announced after the fact, and a lot of the key players were not at the table, number one. Number two, that when it really started to face serious opposition after the announcement of the deal, neither the people who negotiated this, the key political leaders, nor Amazon said, well, let's sit down with the people who are pushing back on this and let's talk about what we might do to address these specific concerns.
That has fascinated me from the beginning of this. At the exact point you're talking about, that there was not more done to save the deal. There was that week where they said, we're thinking about pulling out, and then a week later, they pulled out. You would think there would have been, and maybe there was, and it just wasn't fruitful, but to have that much conversation and not say, let's just hold, and see if we can work this out.
Yeah, people see that, you know, Amazon hasn't paid taxes despite their massive profits.
Yeah, well, he's the richest man in America.
Not just the richest man, but getting, you know, sweet deals here and there. They saw this kind of, you know, effort pitting municipality against municipality. I mean,
That's what the governor does all the time when he does these does these grandiose.
Right.
We're going to give out. There's $10 million or $100 million.
We're going to give out $4 billion to get $32
right.
billion or whatever.
And we're going to have, we want communities
I'm
to go
sure
up against
plays
each
that
other.
Way. Well, the numbers do not bear that out, Alan. Mm-hmm. They just don't. I think people are sick of these deals. I think this was one piece of a much bigger story where people are saying, like, why are we giving away this money? And we're not necessarily seeing the returns. And if we are, it's not clear what they are. That we're not finding ways to get the money back if these companies don't live up to the deals. And we see many examples of that.
Certainly we have.
Yeah, we're seeing it locally. A lot of IDAs are getting backlash. Communities, we've had some in the Hudson Valley where communities, they're looking, companies are looking to put dramatic, tremendous warehouses in. But the communities look and they're not crazy about the tax breaks. They don't think there are enough jobs offered. They're not crazy about the location that it's going to be in. And I think folks are asking, this is good for a business, but is this really good for us? And we want to say.
And but one last thing here, and that is, I've said it before, I'm saying it again, the polling in New York State, in Astoria, or in Long Island City, in Long Island, was massively right. for this. Not a little bit, but massively for it. So now you have the progressive community who are saying, we know better than them. We know right. better than them.
Well,
they
it's
wanted
set
those
up
jobs.
As this binary thing where, like, we're either going to get all these jobs and have to give away the store, or nothing's going to happen. And we had a conversation on this panel a few days ago where we said, no, there are other ways to do economic development that don't include giving away the store to a company that is one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest, in the world, that there are ways to do this and still help Long Island City.
Well, let me put it this way. That didn't happen. That was the deal on the table.
But it could have happened.
Well, it woulda, coulda, shmoulda. And, you know, the fact of the matter the fact of the matter is...
I like the last one.
A vulture may come through the room here. It didn't. It wasn't that way.
But it could.
Yes.
It's not random.
But that was the deal. That was the deal on the table. Do I think Bezos should pay more? Do I think that the company should pay more? Of course. Who wouldn't? But on the other hand, it was a golden opportunity for New York City, and it got messed up.
I mean, Amazon already has a footprint in the city. It will be interesting to see how this now plays out for Amazon. And they obviously had a number two and a number three site. And how strong arm they give this next community, and how welcoming is this next community that they select? Mm-hmm.
You know, Barry, I asked the governor that question: can this be saved? And his no was so fast and so interesting that just no.
But why?
So, why?
Well, why? If they
right.
weren't willing
that's
to negotiate
right.
with the community and address these concerns,
oh,
why?
Please.
Why not?
No, because I don't agree with you. I don't think that the community was wildly for it. The AOC group wasn't for it, but the community, the people who are going to get those jobs, Jim, those are the ones who wanted the
Which
job.
Goes right. back to my then original question. If the governor still sees this as a really great thing, could he have or should he have worked it through with Amazon, knowing that there was going to be some problems in that week or two where it was hit or miss? And maybe, as Joe said, maybe there were those negotiations that we don't know, but it seemed that it went very quickly to a no, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home.
So the real question is, who is he madder at? Amazon or the Senate Democrats?
But the other,
or us on this panel.
Right. Yeah. Right. The flip of this, though, is here you have, you know, AOC and the progressives wanting to help the people they serve, ostensibly, with all of the rhetoric of we need to, you know, bring in more jobs, we need to get people more stable and blah, blah, blah. I'm not trying to denigrate it, but that's where their message is. And here was an opportunity for that to happen. And yes, it was corporate welfare to a certain degree.
No question.
But certain degree, with a good return, I would think. And that didn't happen. So now these people are still out of jobs. These people are still struggling.
They didn't get the jobs they wanted. And that's where we disagree, Mr. Ketterer. You know, I think that a progressive is one thing, when a progressive says to the very community she or they say they're representing, and it turns out that the people want something that they did, I think that's the height of arrogance. Mm-hmm.
I just have to say, well, number one, I'm not being arrogant about this. Number two,
you're not
that arrogant. There are other more reasonable ways to do economic development in this state. Is a conversation that's long overdue.
Well, you have to go back to the students at Bard, and you have made yourself very clear about your progressive instincts. Nevertheless, we disagree.
Okay.
That was a shot.
Schmutter.
Schmutter.
Schmutter. Schmutter. You know, yes, there are different ways of doing economic development in the state, but the way that it has been done has been so entrenched. Creating a new paradigm is going to be more difficult, and people will still be out of jobs.
Nah, come on. No. You know, you go up to Buffalo and see how they messed all of that up, which they certainly did, Libby.
Yeah.
That you use the word paradigm. It's one of my
still feeling the effects there in Albany as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fact is, you know, the Cuomo approach to this has not been good. But in this case, he had a winner.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. This is fun. Everybody getting all riled up. I like it.
I like it.
I like it. It's fun. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back after this.
Well done.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Libby Post, Barry Lewis, Jim Ketterer, and Alan Chartok with a fistful of mail. The email server works. We're getting a lot of notes on this subject. We'll talk about it, and then we'll move on to other stuff as well. We have a lot of international news to talk about as well, but we will start with the letters we have before us. You can join in on the fun by going to panel at WAMC.org. Go,
now,
Alan.
Now, remember, folks, you write them, and within reason, I read them. So therefore,
keep them short, keep them to the point, do all that good stuff.
Don't be blaming me.
All right.
John says, AOC, good morning, panel. I'm very much on the right and support the president. And while I know how unpopular he is with you, I'm very worried about Alexandria Cortez becoming the face of the Democratic Party as far as election chances in 2020 are concerned. After this recent gaffe with Amazon, she's starting to be referred to as She Guevara by those of us on the right.
Does anyone need to explain to them, or? You think?
Well, this purported writer, John, who is very much for a Trumper and to the right, he says, but then says he's worried about her becoming the face of the Democratic Party. If you're in the other party, why are you worried about what's going on? And so sometimes I think some people write letters that are a little bit inconsistent.
Also, just on that letter, is it a gaffe? I mean, was it really a gaffe on her part? I think that's to be determined, isn't it?
Well, no, that's right. I think she's lost some power here. I do. I mean, as I say, my audience of one, me, I really loved her when she came out and started talking about this stuff. I think this was a gaffe.
Does she need to be careful that, and I just throw this out, Alan, since you're the political maven on this, is she has to be careful that she doesn't lose sight of who her constituency is, and that she worries about a larger base and not the constituency, which is what probably got her elected as opposed to Crowley losing?
Yeah, well, her group, obviously, including all the people there, were concerned, but she didn't read the tea leaves correctly.
But now she's a national figure.
Mm-hmm.
Which
question.
She wasn't before.
Yeah,
she got elected not being a national divide. Yeah. She got elected because she knew she knew her constituency, and now suddenly she finds that her base is worldwide.
You may be right.
And I kind of throw that out there. In a very short period of time, she's become, you know, one of the key figures. I mean, that's extraordinary.
Fame is fleeting.
Yeah.
It can come and it can go.
That's true.
John says, Amazon deal. I suspect Amazon realized there was no way they could maintain a non-union shop in New York. John.
I just looked this up because I wanted to remind myself, but Alan mentioned something that is really important about the support of the people. There was a poll taken shortly after Amazon announced that they were going to re-examine the deal with New York. 56% to 36% New Yorkers approved the agreement between New York and Amazon, and that was from Siena College.
Is that statewide, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'd be curious once you broke it down to New York City.
It's been done, and I think again, the margins were quite impressive. For the deal.
They said even as Amazon has said to be re-examining, upstate voters are evenly divided, but suburban voters strongly approve, and in New York City, where some local activists have voiced opposition, voters approve of the deal by 23 points.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah. Okay, and Kevin, who writes quite frequently, thank goodness, says keywords. Not a giveaway, progressive elitism, populist bullying. The private sector has not stepped in to, quote, claim the property. They were waiting for the new residents. Long Island City has allowed super talks with zoning and tax allowances. Citibank is leaving Long Island City. Good job, Queens. I think that's supposed to be funny. Okay. And Bob writes to us. Giveaways. Panel, please explain how billing Amazon $3 billion less in taxes and receiving $27 billion in taxes is a giveaway. By my math, that's $27 billion that would have been gained that's now lost forever. If you disagree, please tell me where that saved $3 billion is now. Jim, I take it that that's something you might want to take on?
I think it's, it again, this is just getting to this, the way that this was framed was this binary choice. It's all this giveaway or it's no jobs whatsoever. And I'm saying, why don't we have a conversation about other ways to do economic developments in any place in the state that might be needed? And if Long Island City is one of those places, it rises to the top, I'm not sure that it would, but then how can we best address those concerns without giving away the store?
Amazon says, I love this panel, but with all due respect, everyone is sounding out of touch regarding Amazon. First off, I never get polled, nor does it seem are the people I talk to who are not convinced by the proposal. Amazon is known for being anti-union, for low-paying, high-stress jobs. To be able to buy a home in New York City, one needs an incredible income. Even to rent, developers are asking one to make 40 times the rent. The gains don't add up for the average person. I also find speculation that this will lose Democratic seats in upcoming elections laughable. There are many ways to create jobs. Where's Cuomo's next proposal? I think Alan is too biased to be asking the governor these questions. I think I asked him a lot of questions, and I think it was tough. And even, I hate to say this, the New York Times said I was quite persistent in asking those questions. Okay. So Amazon, says Catherine. I agree that losing the deal was a huge, capital letters, mistake. That said, I think there was more to it. I think Amazon had buyer's remorse after deciding to do two locations. Then, when the naysayers went public, that offered them an opportunity to back out.
We'll never know. That's the thing. You kind of wonder, if it was so good for everyone, why did it suddenly end so quickly?
None of this should be mysterious. We're dealing with public funds, we're dealing with public negotiations, none of this should have been mysterious from the beginning, through the process, or at the end of the
process. Except we're in New York State, where all public funds are mysterious.
Fern says, Amazon and LIC. Amazon settling into Long Island City was a disastrous idea, in my opinion. All the talk about creating jobs is only part of the picture. There was no mention of improving the infrastructure. Sadly, the streets are no wider than they were in the 50s and 60s when I grew up around there. The subways are the same. How much more congestion can the already overpopulated area stand? Rents would have risen, driving out the very residents that now populate the neighborhood and, by the way, who, according to the polling, wanted it. Right?
Rents, subways, infrastructure. These are the things that New Yorkers are concerned about. And I think if the deal had clearly been addressing some of those concerns, you would have had more.
Well, again, Joe read you the numbers. Sorry to fight with you about this, Professor. The numbers were there. The people wanted it. You know, when you live in New York City, you gotta take the good with the bad. Round table, says Patrick, a French listener in Northampton. I wonder if the panel could just go a notch higher on the Amazon topic, what kind of society the Amazon, Uber, Google, Facebook are offering, and how it serves the people at large? Is it the future of a job only low-paying jobs? And that's again from Patrick, a French listener in Northampton.
And I wonder if Patrick has ever purchased any gifts using the opportunity to go online. I mean, I think it's a mix. We love mm-hmm. the convenience. I don't know anyone who hasn't, you know, shopped and where the Amazon box comes to you. There's a great convenience with that. But we also like going to the main streets, and I think it's a mix. I don't think you have to, because you may purchase something and use Amazon, that doesn't mean you are anti-small business, or, you know, you can be all things.
Well, is that an editorial position that you're taking? Or,
position.
Is it a statement of reality? We all know that many places are closing down.
For many reasons. I don't think Sears is problem, or some of these big box stores. I think, you know, pay less. I don't think it's totally because of Amazon. I think some people did not structure themselves properly. You know, I think a lot of the malls were going out of business before Amazon became the behemoth that it was.
This is also a New York City problem. More and more empty storefronts mm-hmm. in Manhattan and in high-end parts of Manhattan.
But you know what that's about. That's about greed. Yeah. That's what it is. These guys have a price point which is absurd. So I walk around the West Side every once in a while, and I see all of these stores. Now, don't tell me that they couldn't rent those stores. They're waiting for more and more money.
Sure. How many Dwayne Reeds do you really need more in New York City?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, I have a friend who said there are three or four of them right around his apartment on 89th Street.
All right.
That's a topic, Joe.
Yeah. Well,
Reed. How have they talk about Amazon?
I want to talk about North Korea before we go to a break. The quote I believe from the president of the United States was, "We fell in love." Trump and Kim are both showering praise, stroking egos.
You have to be careful with the word "showering praise." We have to say the words "we are in love."
Right. Yeah. Right. So stroke egos on path.
Okay.
Okay. Enough. Shower praise, stroke egos on path to nuclear negotiations. President Trump is steadfast in his determination to meet face-to-face in Hanoi with Kim Jong-un, aides say, because he has an unwavering faith in the power of the pen pal relationship he has cultivated with the new North Korean leader, not only to bend the course of history, but to shape his own legacy. Meanwhile, over on the Sunday talk shows, and I believe Mike Pompeo was on Fox on Sunday, it was on with Jake Tapper on State of the Union. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that North Korea remains a nuclear threat, contradicting the tweet by President Trump. Pompeo made the remark in an interview on State of the Union days before the president holds his second summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Well, on the Secretary of State,
we'll give you this one.
All right, I'll start off. When the Secretary of State is publicly contradicting where the president stands on an issue of nuclear weapons, that says to me that either there are parts of the government that are trying to publicly move the president's position because they have been unable to do it privately, or that the administration is unable to do one of the things that's sort of a key task in any policymaking, but particularly foreign policy, that you need to have all of the key players, the principals, on the same page.
You're telling me that Mike Pompeo didn't check in with the president before he said, I think these guys love the idea. The president says one thing, perhaps, and I just inject this into this, that his Russian masters or friends may want this to happen on their terms, and that they say to Pompeo, okay, go out and contradict me on this. I don't think Pompeo seems to be the kind of guy who would do that without instruction.
Well, you know, so you think that he has instruction from...
I do.
The president
I do.
To go out and contradict him.
I do. I think that's certainly.
I suppose that's a scenario.
It's part of their way they've been running the shop right from day one.
I mean, I think that there has been a lot of chaos in this administration. It's very hard to be on the same page on all of these issues. So that's one scenario, that it's just purely chaotic. Also, you know, it's not just this administration. We've seen other administrations where principals try to frame the issue in different ways outside of the normal process. And this could be one of those as well. The idea that this was all designed, I suppose, is true.
Well, just to add fuel to what Alan said.
Can I just, I'll let you say, I just want to clarify, just one moment, just clarify what Mike Pompeo said yesterday on State of the Union on CNN. He said that even though what the president said, what he said was the efforts that have been, this is a quote from Pompeo, what he said was the efforts that have been had been made in Singapore have substantially taken down the risk to the American people.
Taken down the risk, right. And so we even see the president himself contradicting himself. So when he used the word denuclearization, he was initially clearly meaning the removal of all nuclear weapons. He just, I think last night, said,
took it off the table.
As long as there's no testing, I'm happy. So that's a different position than denuclearization. There's a great debate, I think, within the administration and people looking at the administration. Well, what do we mean by denuclearization? What's the end goal here?
If we think that Donald Trump in the long term really is thinking or caring about a deal with North Korea, I think we're crazy. I mean, I think he's looking possibly at maybe getting a Nobel Peace Prize and that he's looking at some other stuff. I don't think he really cares about this.
Or what's going on in Washington this week.
I think that's what he cares about. And if we say anything about Donald Trump, he is a master of diversion.
Mm-hmm.
And what has he done? On the same day in these days leading up to it, nobody is now talking or really, really talking much about Michael Cohen on Wednesday. And maybe they will on Wednesday. But he is great of having folks talk about something that he does not want them to be talking
That's
about.
Right.
And I don't think the timing of both the trip and Pompeo and everything that leads up to it, because the idea of Pompeo is basically said what most of the national intelligence folks have said, which is that, you know, yes, North Korea is still a threat. So that no one's surprised by that. And there have been people within the Trump administration who have counted what he said. I think the timing is clear that this ties into we want to talk about this and not talk about Michael Cohen.
Don't forget the Russians. The Russians are players here. If you accept the fact that this guy, Trump, is in the pocket of the Russians, then you have to factor into the fact that we are hearing this morning that Trump is going to lower all his expectations and basically give away the store at this negotiation.
Well, I also think it's worth noting that whatever deal we might end up with North Korea, and currently we don't have one and there's no really clear roadmap to have one, but it's highly likely that it will be a much less effective deal than the one we walked away with the Iranians. That there we did have a deal in place, a multilateral deal where we were able to at least forestall progress in nuclear weapons, international monitoring, all the pieces in place that are not necessarily going to fall into place with the North Koreans.
Alan said that, of course, Russia is a part of this, but China is a big part of this as
sure.
well.
Yeah. China for sure is a big part of this. I think it's one of the reasons that the president has come out and said we're going to delay the imposition of new and increased tariffs against China, that it's not just a question of the trade deal itself that may or may not happen, but it's also has to do with North Korea.
And it has to do with people's anger at Trump in general and the fact that when he says something like this, the market goes skyrocketing.
Which is what he really loves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss. Alan has letters. We have a lot of other things to talk about. We will do all of that right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jim Ketterer. We have Barry Lewis and Libby Post with us as well. Alan has a few letters, and then we'll move on to some other things.
Yes, sir. Droopy writes us.
Droopy?
That's what it says here. Okay. Droopy.
All right.
At the bottom, he says Droopy, but Droopy. When is the last time any of you have been to LIC or had to deal with the morning commute in New York City on public transportation?
So Long Island City, right?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Logistically, this was never a plausible proposal, and I, for one, never expected this deal to actually happen. What do they call that when you look back and say you said something that you didn't?
Hindsight is 2020.
Armchair quarterbacking.
This is like when you guys talk about marijuana and CBD. You guys are talking about things that experientially you have no experience with. Respectfully, yours, and that's from Drew, otherwise known as Droopy.
I'm here to tell Droopy that I take the subway every week. I spend lot of my time in New York City, and so I do have experience with that. And New Yorkers are exceedingly upset about the state of the subway. Yeah. I know that may not be relevant to the Amazon deal, but that is the number one issue on everybody's minds.
My friend on 89th Street, who I just referred to, he talks about going on the subway all the time, and he says it's great. He doesn't understand what everybody's yelling about.
He should talk to Droopy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he's not getting on at 89th Street, it might not be 86th Street. It might not be as effective if you get on at 34th.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
and
I think
downtown.
The outer boroughs are the ones who are really suffering. To be honest.
Yeah.
And all of New York State should be concerned, because all of New York State at some point is going to have to pay for this. And we may be paying for it now because governor's plan goes through in terms of commuters or people wanting to go into the city, we're going to be paying more.
But if Jim Tedisco and Daphne Jordan have their way, upstate's going to secede from the city.
Oh, I'm sorry.
State.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
you
got that. I mean, that's really going to go
far. Even
though
the city funds the rest of
the
state.
No kidding. But, you know, let's not let facts get in the way of
Has Jim Tedisco already... He's got a flag and everything?
Yeah, he does. Okay. He does. It's amazing. Yeah.
Okay, and Chris from Albany, now that the deal fell through, we talk about these 25,000 as if they were a sure thing. They were not in the bank, and a quick look at other local deals with private companies shows how fleeting these numbers are. Corporations pitting localities against each other for huge tax giveaways is terrible policy, and that's why I am glad HQ2 failed. Polls be damned. Thanks always, Chris from Albany.
Full speed ahead.
Wrong. John says Amazon. Hi, panel. My daughter and her husband have good-paying jobs in Manhattan. They live in Queens. In anticipation of the Amazon deal, their landlord raised their rent by $300 a month. She is now looking to move. This is how it goes. The vast majority of the workers at Amazon just don't earn enough to live where they work. The people who benefit will not be them. And that's from John on the Amazon question.
I guess the question for John is, will the landlord, now that those jobs are not coming, and it's what the market bears, and if he can't fill the apartments with the increase, he'll have to lower it.
Barry, what do you think?
I don't think nothing ever gets lower.
I'm with you. That's what I think is going to happen. Nothing.
So let's talk about, we started very briefly talking about China, and I would like to get into that a little bit more, of the president delaying the China tariff deadline. We learned yesterday that he has, the president said, citing progress in China and the trade talks, that he would delay his own deadline to increase tariffs on Chinese goods on Sunday as his administration continues a months-long effort to persuade Beijing to make significant structural changes to its economy that have so far proved elusive. In the tweet, Mr. Trump on Sunday said he would delay a Friday deadline to increase tariffs on $200 billion in Chinese imports, citing substantial progress during a weekend of trade talks in Washington between American and Chinese officials. The president, who has been eager to cut a deal with Beijing, said the negotiators had forged a compromise on key issues, including China's requirement that American companies hand over valuable intellectual property and technology as a condition of doing business in China, as well as more purchases of American agriculture and energy products like liquid natural gas.
And now this from your local Dow Jones reader. The market, less than an hour into this, is now up 174 points. It's now up to 174 points, right? 174.35 up to 26.205.
And the president's a day trader, and this is great news, and I think he's motivated by that.
So, what about when as far as these negotiations, Jim, this idea of these conditions of doing business in China, of China's requirement that American companies hand over valuable intellectual property and technology as a condition of doing business in China, as well as more purchases of American agriculture and energy products like liquid natural gas. I mean, what are the chances of that actually happening?
Well, I think a good starting point on this is that we're seeing an interesting test as to whether tariffs as a tool in this work. Do they work in terms of getting a better trade deal? But also, do they work politically in American politics? Because these are taxes. These increase the price of certain commodities. They increase the price to consumers of all sorts of things. And when that starts to trickle down, do people who are paying that additional price have a backlash? But we also see in American politics that there is substantial pushback against the way international trade has been happening on the right and on the left. The supporters of Bernie Sanders were very much against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, very much against other sorts of trade deals. So this is an interesting experiment. I mean, there's no question that there have been problems with the questions of international property, access to markets, the Chinese manipulating currency. But is it better to do these big trade deals like previous administrations were going to do, or is it better or to work through the World Trade Organization, which we set up to address these sorts of things, or to do these one-on-one deals? And clearly the president, whether it's on nuclear negotiations, on trade policy, he prefers to do these one-on-one, highly personalized deals. I think
now,
it's
as
still,
far as that's concerned, well, we've just gotten a letter from a resident of New Paltz, maybe an English professor, maybe not, who says, please stop reinforcing Trump language. We have agreements with other countries, not deals. Sometimes I go crazy around here.
You know, the fact of the matter is that, yes.
We have agreements of many different types. Yes.
Trump does want to do the one-on-one because that's all he knows how to do. And when anyone from state or anyone from the trade folks in the administration or economics or whatever try to talk to him, give him something to read, he doesn't read it. He doesn't care. He doesn't know what he's doing, except he thinks he's the best person to make a deal. And so, yeah, he'll keep going on the one-on-one.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
My question is, how can we tell Beijing to make significant structural changes to its economy? I don't quite get who are we to tell another country to change its economy, how it works.
Kind of like who are we to tell a country to pay for a wall?
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Well, if I mean,
just have about 30 seconds.
If they are doing things with their economy that are specifically counter to the ways in which international trade is supposed to happen under internationally agreed to agreements,
deals.
Then there is recourse to that. There ought to be recourse.
Fine,
to
and
that.
We should be able to then hone in Wall Street, because what happens on Wall Street has an impact on the international economic scene as well.
I'm pretty sure if the name of the book had been The Art of the Agreement, there would still be an upset letter writer. But we'll be back right after this report. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here. Jim Ketterer. We have Barry Lewis and Libby Post. All right. We have the one letter that we didn't get to before the break, so we'll do that.
Dear panel, if Trump is totally in the pocket of Putin, why are they on opposite sides in regime change in Venezuela and Syria? Thank you. And that's from Nancy. Well, I don't know that our position on Syria is what it once was. I think, you know, we've come a lot closer to letting Putin have his way. And in terms of Venezuela, who knows what decisions have been made in terms of how these things are going to play out. Jim, I know you may have a different view on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not my position to say that, well, my starting point is going to be that the president of the United States is in the pocket of another foreign leader and an adversary. If in fact we do see specific evidence of that, okay. But unless and until that, I'm going to work on the assumption that there's other things to analyze. Yeah. In terms of Syria, it's very hard to say.
You don't think the Trump administration's proven comfortableness with the Russians, which have been proven. People are going to jail and all the rest of it. One after another, one meeting after another, proves anything to you?
I do think it's concerning, and I think that that it needs to continue to be investigated and to be revealed, whatever is happening or not happening. But I also think the formulation and the implementation of American foreign policy in any administration is a highly complex act, and we see lots of different players. And I don't think it can all be explained by one thing.
And that, my good friend, who I respect so much, puts us on different sides of the table.
Yet again. What a coulda shmoulda.
I love the shmoulda.
We got to get that on a T-shirt.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, let's do the letters, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. We'll do some miscellaneous topics here.
Bob says, Amazon. Bill Maher made an excellent point in his show that Amazon should move to Detroit, West Virginia, or the poorest state, Mississippi, and really help people need jobs. New York City is fine and will be fine without Amazon. And Harold says, ask Kanna Johari how corporate welfare worked for them with Beechnut, or ask Schenectady about giving the store to General Electric. All good questions. Anthony says, North Korea. Good morning, panel. The eventual meeting in Vietnam is nothing more than a visual fodder for both Kim and Trump. For anyone to think that China would allow North Korea to wage nuclear war, especially at the United States, is incredibly short-sighted. China, though state-regulated capitalism, would never allow the largest market in the world to be damaged. Too many electric cars may be sold there. And the note China holds over us is huge, and that's Anthony. Ben says, missing the point. The missing the point button is lit once again. You should really be talking about the LNG deal. LNG?
Don't know.
Liquid natural gas.
Oh, yeah. Okay, thanks.
Oh, thank you.
Liquefied natural gas.
Yeah. And the way the Republicans made it possible to export LNG, which for many years was illegal, tariffs or not, this land rape process of fracking here to export energy there is ongoing. By only talking about all the rhetoric associated with Trump's antics, you are falling for the old obfuscation that a big giveaway is in progress to energy companies once again, all at great cost to our fragile environment. And that's Ben from Richfield Springs, New York.
And isn't it also the case that the Obama administration supported fracking?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, I think it could be said that our governor was at least lukewarm to it, although pretty soon he saw the error of his ways.
Which is why a lot of counties and towns, certainly in Sullivan County, took it upon themselves to ban fracking before the state did.
Yeah.
Right. But the previous administration had a policy that was different than Governor Cuomo.
Yeah. And there was Governor Cuomo who saw this issue unfolding and yelled at the top of his voice, there's gold in them there hills, political gold anyway. Frederica says, why is there no discussion about North Korea cutting food rations to its population? Everything is about deals and money, not people. Ricky.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. We talk a lot, and I think rightly so, about the nature of the Iranian regime, and that's one of the reasons that we shouldn't be cutting a deal or making an agreement with the Iranian regime, because they're bad actors in many other ways. Well, certainly North Korea is a bad actor in so many ways. I mean, truly horrendous behavior. And so if we're willing to say, well, let's at least make a deal on nukes with the North Koreans, then what does that say about our ability to make a deal with somebody else, even if they're a bad actor?
Well, but what's so clear to me is that Trump is backing down like crazy now on the North Korean thing, right? And he's doing that because he wants a deal at any cost. He's already said the first step was getting them not to do these tests. And now he's saying that's all we ever wanted, not to do the tests. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. That is ridiculous.
Okay, so
Joe, one more letter and then the lightning round.
And there's only one letter left. Thanks, Joe. Deal versus agreement. There's nothing like our audience, right? Good morning. I agree with the professor from SUNY New Paltz. We don't know that he was a professor. That we don't know. I injected that as a sort of sharp stick. We have agreements with other countries, not deals. There's an old Chinese saying, calling things by the right names is the first step on the journey to wisdom, unquote. And that's from Joel's, a professor emeritus of English at SUNY Orange. Don't you see?
There you go. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go into the lightning round. So some things that happened over the weekend. Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots and other men accused of soliciting prostitution in a Florida massage parlor, are expected to be charged by prosecutors as soon as this afternoon. A spokesman for the state attorney in Palm Beach County said Sunday the solicitation charges that ensnared Robert Kraft and nearly 200 men stem from a sweeping months-long law enforcement probe of massage parlors where defendants sought sexual services from women who were allegedly victims of an international human trafficking ring. Nine men with New England ties, including Kraft and billionaire John Childs, are accused of soliciting prostitution from women at those parlors in the month of January. And here is the line that has to, it's sickening however you look at it, but Kraft visited Orchids of Asia Day Spa twice between January 18th and January 22nd, solicited prostitution from female workers, all of it on tape.
Oh, God.
The arrival, the departure, and the services.
Well, here's the issue. I mean, it's prostitution. This is about human trafficking. This is about these Chinese women who aren't allowed to leave this facility. They are there they were brought to this country for one reason only, to be sex workers. It's part of human trafficking. And Kraft and all the other guys are complicit in this kind of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of men who are complicit in this, high-powered folks. We'll see how many fall down because of this one particular thing. But this is one of those things that really needs to be exposed in a way that I don't care who gets hurt, because the people really getting hurt are the women who are being forced into doing this against their will. Probably told, you have to sleep with this many men and then you'll pay off your debt. And then we'll send you back to China because you're illegal, and we'll turn you into ICE. So it's a no-win situation for these women.
Anyone have any comments?
There are a number of things. You're absolutely right, Libby. There's no question that if this is, and there's a great reason to believe it, a conspiracy to make sex workers out of people who are coming to this country, you are absolutely right, and it's disgusting and despicable. However, it does also raise the issue, now that we have decriminalized and then legalized marijuana in some places, whether or not prostitution should be legalized. There are certain things that you get going when you do that. First of all, as Bessie Smith sang it quite well, there are lots of ways to sell it, baby, and a lot of people do sell it one way or another. Sometimes we call it marriage, sometimes we call it other things. Nevertheless, the idea that if you legalize prostitution, you would have health benefits, people could be ready to make money the way that they want to make money. I'm not necessarily for it, but it is a debate, and other countries have done it.
And it's the same argument that the state has made and other states have made regarding the legalization of recreational marijuana, that you can control it, that if you don't do it, there is a black market, or there is people who get it anyways. And so despite not having a complete understanding really of the full risks and dangers, we understand medicinal marijuana, but now there is the legalization of recreational. You can make the same case for prostitution.
And by the way, Barry, there is no proof that it's going to work. We've done it. We've rolled the dice.
Right.
We don't know how many car crashes we're going to get. We don't know.
We still don't know. The New Yorker had a wonderful article a couple of weeks back. We still don't know all the medical pitfalls of it. The jury is still way out on that.
Right.
But we've made a decision because
we threw the dice.
So you can make the same case for the legalization of prostitution.
But we know the medical pitfalls of alcohol. We know what overindulgence does.
Yeah, that's true.
We know about cirrhosis of the liver. We know about
And we've decided we're going to legalize
and,
it.
Right, and it's and it and
cigarettes.
It is legal. Right. Right.
Because
cigarettes,
we had an experience called prohibition.
Right.
That
yeah.
didn't
it didn't work
out.
Right. Right. And honestly, the prohibition on marijuana is not working out either.
No, of course not.
So then prostitution, if you legalize it, if you control it, if you put health benefits, if you put locations, you have to be licensed, do you not control it better and you then tax people, taxing these businesses, or a sin tax, so to speak. We have adult bookstores. To just say, well, we have things kind of like, but not sort of, you know, it's we've just, for whatever reason, we've deemed that prostitution is not as bad as alcohol, cigarettes, or pot.
But on this particular issue, I don't think we have to guess. There are other places, other countries that
Absolutely.
Have legalized
right.
it. We can look at their experiences, see how it's worked out. You know, we're not an island that just has to do something for the first time. We
well,
can
Nevada.
Learn from
yeah,
the
we
experiences.
We have convenient morals. That's it. We have convenient morals, and in some location, we decide this is morally. And of course, always the people who are the most moral are the ones who are usually
using it the most,
abusing it the most.
Right.
Yes,
I mean it's situational ethics, or
right.
you know. But Nevada has legalized prostitution, and there are some counties who are trying to force that out for whatever reason.
And we know nobody's going to Nevada.
Yeah, right. and the fact of the matter is that those women are unionized and yeah. have benefits and. They're
and
making that choice, not a choice that I would make, but at least they're being protected, and they can go home at the end of the day.
And that's a different than slave trade. I mean,
that's right, slave, sex slaves.
No one is suggesting
connecting to. Let me just turn this subject just momentarily while we as we wrap up, though. But isn't it really, really, really dumb to be, especially if you're worth whatever $6 billion,
yeah.
to even take that chance?
Well, but this is it. They think they're above the law. They think they're above everything and that they can do whatever they want. Look at what Trump has done. Look at how he's talked about and what he's done to women. And there's now a new woman coming forward that he abused during the campaign. You know, but they think that they're above it all.
Isn't it really dumb to be the governor of the state of New York with an amazing political future ahead of you?
Right.
To put yourself in a position where you may throw everything out
right.
for
what you did.
What you did, yeah. it, you know, Joe. It's history will continue to have these dumb moments.
No, I understand that.
You know, which head you think with? I mean, it really does come down to that.
There
I mean,
we go.
You know, I mean, well, but it really does come down to that. It's like
glad
why,
you said it.
Right? Why? Well. Why would Robert Kraft, who supposedly loved his wife dearly,
by the
who
way,
he lost,
may have loved his wife.
Yeah, who lost his wife a few years ago? Why would you do this? Why?
Right. If you
just
have the
get a girlfriend.
Right. You have the political. Well, he have a girlfriend who's 40 years younger, but you have he has obviously the financial means to however he wants to, you know, have sex with whomever.
Right.
And he seemed to have taken an incredibly callous way of doing it. And, you know, that's the thing that, okay, now he's going to pay
now
the price.
Pay for it, right?
Misdemeanor account, misdemeanor charges, but what is interesting is what impact it will have on his business and what it will have on the NFL and how they treat him as
and
well.
Probably,
New York Jets fans are certainly
and,
going
yeah.
to be
and,
quite gleeful.
And if you're Kraft and you've been in the spotlight and you know you've seen it, I'm sure you know he's not going to take it. There's no financial hit, you know, and
no.
whatever happened.
No.
So right,
but it may make some of the other owners clean up their own acts.
Yeah.
All I know is that I have a very close relative who, you know, who is would have laid down on the street for the Pats, in terms of he would let people go over him in a truck, and he has not supported that team because of their ownership and his closeness to Donald J. Trump.
But if you're, but maybe the players don't have the same feeling about Trump,
right?
So if you're, it's always a fine line. If you're a sports fan, you dislike something until your team wins. You may not like a player, but if your player suddenly bats 340 and is hitting 40 homers, well, okay, so a little indiscretion. You know, we see it with we see it with domestic violence all the time in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
players are ridiculed and we despise. But suddenly that player has a really good season and, you know.
And the only one who's really been forced out is Colin Kaepernick for actually
the only one,
doing his you know, kneeling down for his ethics.
Right.
And we'll see how that story works out.
You know,
we're not done with that yet.
Right. No, we're not. But he hasn't been able to play.
No, but he's also made a fortune now in a suit.
Okay, we're going to we have to end. My apologies, but thanks to everybody. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And
thanks, Joe, and welcome back.
Thank you. We'll be back after this short break.